You are listening to the Zen Nova Scotia podcast with talks by Cone Franz. These talks are made possible in part by generous donations from our listeners. To find out how to support and take part in our community, visit zennovascotia.com.
So tonight I want to talk about the third precept, which is often translated as not misusing sex. And I want to start by acknowledging a lot about this precept, and first by saying there's so much to talk about here, right? And some will write this as not misusing sex and sexuality. And that opens it up, and it gets really big. And we could talk about advertising, and we could talk about all these cultural forces, and those would be wonderful conversations to have. But tonight, in order to make this kind of as uncomfortable as possible, I'm going to stick to actual sex. Because there's so much there also. But maybe eventually we'll get to the rest. And then I want to acknowledge just how hard this one is to talk about for so many reasons. Maybe the first one, the surface one, is that we can't talk about this one in the way in which it was originally intended. That's not really that relevant anymore. Of these five universal precepts, this third was always interpreted differently for monks and for lay people. For monks and nuns, it meant that you were going to be celibate, right? For lay people, it could be vague, but it was generally interpreted that you didn't do things that were considered culturally inappropriate. And obviously, most of that list would be very different today. There has always been, in almost every culture and every time, an idea that, not that sex in itself necessarily was bad, though that those cultures have existed, certainly, but that women were. And so a lot of the talk around this particular precept would be around either men not succumbing to women who existed kind of to take them off of the path, right? To distract them with their wiles. Or to women as a reminder to please not do that, right? Uncontrollable though your desires may be, leave the men alone. And so we have to come at this in a way that feels honest today. And we have to give ourselves permission from the beginning to kind of disregard the baggage. To disregard, for example, the idea that in addition to everything I just said, there were also all these concerns about aberrant sexual behavior. So anything other than a man and a woman would have been unacceptable in most contexts. Any gender identities other than very traditional ones would have been considered deeply problematic. And all of that would have played into how people understood this precept. So first, we're handed something that has kind of reached an expiration date in one sense and has to be made new. That's hard. But that's not really the hard part. The hard part is obvious, right? That it's awkward to talk about sex. No matter how we feel about it philosophically, it's very personal. If I say, do not kill, what follows from that is a wonderful philosophical discussion about killing, right? That has such a great remove from us. Because first, okay, if you tell me not to kill, at least on the surface, I'm going to agree with you with no problem. I'm not going to push back. I'm going to say, but what about sometimes? Right? I'm going to say, that's a good idea, actually. Right? And then I'm going to, unless murdering is just my job, I'm going to have to circle around in kind of ever narrower circles to start to arrive at this place where I see that this relates to me in an immediate way. And then I start to say, oh, actually, I'm involved. I'm complicit in this. This is part of my life. But even then, often what I'm arriving at is I'm thinking, well, yeah, there are these bugs that live in my eyes, and I blink, and I harm them, and, you know, and I eat things, and of course that contributes to this. It's a lot of invisible killing, right? But then we get to this third one. We get to this question of sex, and it's different in every way, because the whole reason this precept exists is because probably it's something that you want to do, to be engaged in some way. It isn't like killing where you can just agree at the door, right? So, oh, okay, now this is complicated. It's saying you're going to do something, but you have to do it right. And then I think we start to feel kind of raw. Part of it is because we literally, you know, we're kind of naked in this conversation. To the degree that we're relating this to us, there's something very exposed, even in our minds. But then there's this other element, which is that while I may not want to contribute to killing of animals in factory farms or something like that, if you suggest to me that I'm causing harm through sexual relationships, I know exactly who you're talking about. It's painful, right? It's not that I might in the abstract be causing harm there. What if I didn't understand this precept and I caused harm to that person or to that person? What if I'm continuing to do that? It's so human. It's so intimate to talk about this at all, to explore this at all. So I want to acknowledge from the beginning that not only is this one tricky in all the ways that the other ones are tricky, you know, and just like all the rest, I won't come up with some great answer or some little mantra you can say to yourself so that you always get it right. That would be great. But also that this, I think this one can knock us off balance in a particular way from the beginning. There's so much to explore. And one of the things I was thinking about on the drive here was how, you know, a few weeks ago we talked about the three poisons. If you want to explore the three poisons, which are attachment, aversion, and ignorance, what a great place. Right? You can't talk about sex without attachment, because there's attraction. There's something that draws you in. You can't talk about it without aversion, because not everything draws you in. And you can't talk about it without talking about ignorance, because as intimate as this is, you don't actually know how you're affecting another person. There's always a question mark. There's always an unknown. There's an idea, because it's so intimate, that we're establishing a kind of shared narrative with another human being. And it can feel like that, and sometimes to a degree it can be that, because of the agreement to do that. But in fact, there are two narratives, right? And you only get to know one of them, if you're lucky, you know, if you're aware enough to really see honestly what your narrative is, you get to see that one. So there's a degree to which you're always a little bit blind. That's a lot to work with. It's also such a good example of how precepts reflect one another. You know, we go back a step to the question of taking something that's not offered freely. Right? A conversation in 2019 about this precept includes some discussion of not just consent, but again, the degree to which two narratives align. Quite frankly, until recently, no one talking about this precept really cared about that part. Number four is not lying, right, to yourself or to anyone. That's relevant here. The fifth is not indulging in intoxicants. Also relevant here. There's unmistakably an element of intoxication, right? Not just in the moment, but sometimes even by just dropping the idea into the room, it could change the way you breathe. It's such a drug. And unlike others, where we choose to take something or not, by my simply raising the question, now you're all taking this a little bit. There's a little hit. So you have to work at it from the inside, always from the inside. So far all I've talked about is how hard this one is. And it's not going to get better, but I want to talk about the one thing that I always circle back to, which is I think the really profound and really kind of juicy question here. And it's not, you know, to me the really alive question of this precept doesn't have to do with should you be having sex with that person specifically, or are all the causes and conditions in place for this to be right? I don't know, right? We do our best. It has to do with this question of misusing, right? Don't misuse sex says explicitly that sex is something that's being used, that it's a means to something. That's very insightful, because of course it is. There's something we want. This isn't just the case for sex, but sex is such a great place to be talking about it. There's something you want. Some of that, of course, is just experiential, but a lot of it is narrative driven. It's having something affirmed. It's having something verified. It's maybe it's being made to feel safe, right? Or maybe it's being made to not feel safe in a kind of bungee jumping kind of way, right? Depending on the situation. But it's something that we enter into with some idea of what we're going to get out of it, right? And in that sense, it's transactional. It doesn't even have to be a transaction with the other person. It doesn't even have to be that the other person is engaged in that conversation. It's that you're taking something up, not just for its own sake, but with a hope of a particular reward that ranges from knowing you're okay in the world to just feeling less stressed out. right? Whatever it is, you're making a deal with it. And then that deal either goes well or it doesn't. This is an acknowledgement, in a sense, that this is what we do with everything. Everything. But because this one is a particularly hard area to see in another way, it's an especially good place to explore the question. To what degree am I entering into this kind of encounter, entering into this kind of contact with another person based on an expectation of something for me? Right? To what degree am I even aware of what that is? To what degree is that a fair thing to ask? To what degree is this about me? Even though it is so obviously not just me. Can I even imagine that kind of relationship or that kind of encounter minus that quality of expectation? Do I have a frame of reference for that? There's, you know, this is where I would circle back to Zazen, and I'd say, and in Zazen we learn, right? And if we want to talk about stepping away from expectations, if we want to talk about stepping away from that transactional element, right? That's perfect. That's what we do. But so much of that, and this is where I think it gets tricky again, so much of how Zazen works is on disappointment. Right? You do exactly the same thing every day in the same way, always looking for something, until finally you just keep doing the thing but stop asking for something in return. But that isn't how we want to describe sex, right? It has its own category. It's a place where it's not enough to let go of what you think it should be, because it's so obviously a place where you also want to kind of offer. And that makes it more complicated than Zazen. I think I actually did the whole talk about how hard it is, but it's like all of them, you know, you circle this your whole life. It changes throughout your life. Again, in this case, in dramatic ways, maybe, because it's so based on conditions. The way that you relate to this when you're 19 is not the way that you're going to relate to it when you're 60. For so many reasons. Some of which have to do with maturity, and some of which are completely beyond your control. But it's very unlikely that you ever just put it down. It's very unlikely that it ever feels really simple or really clear. I think that's not bad. But there's no... It doesn't offer any place of rest. I'll stop there.
For more information about Zen, our practice, and how you can support and take part in our community, please visit zennovascotia.com.